Hello and welcome to The Music and the Movies, a program that looks at and listens to the sweet spot where music and movies intersect. In this hour, we ponder the special alchemy that happens when sound meets image, where music lovers and cinephiles come together. We explore a different theme in each episode, arranged around an idea or a person, and we delve into why some of our favorite movie moments are also musical ones. My name is Robert Horton. I'm a movie critic and historian and a member of the National Society of Film Critics. I'll play some music and talk about it in an attempt to get to the bottom of a lifelong fascination with why film is so especially intoxicating when music is involved. And at the end of each show, I'll round things off with the trailer, a particular cut that either didn't fit into the overall flow or has some special meaning to me or just so weird it deserves its own spot. So join us, won't you, for The Music and the Movies. Today's episode, Queens. Well, today we are thinking about the end of the long reign of Elizabeth II in Britain today, and that there have been so many movies made about queens that we can easily fill up an hour with music from those films. We could probably do with movies just about queens named Elizabeth. We're going to look at how some fine film composers have tackled the royal subject, from the glory days of the Hollywood studio system to some very recent examples. And then for the trailer, at the end of our show, we have a wild card, quasi-punk song used to clever effect in a different kind of royal biography. Sometimes I begin our shows with the first track that came to mind when the theme presented itself. And I'm going to do that again now, remembering a BBC television series from 1971, broadcast in the States in 72. If you were watching Masterpiece Theater in those days, you might recall a great period of the miniseries, including The Six Wives of Henry VIII, classic look at royal intrigue. The follow-up to that series was Elizabeth R, a detailed account of the first Queen Elizabeth's reign, stretched out over six 85-minute episodes, all helpfully introduced by Alistair Cook, who I suspect made Anglophiles out of many Americans at that time, including the young me. So it was a fine series with Glenda Jackson, spectacular as the Virgin Queen. And because there were six episodes, of course, you got to hear the theme music over and over again, which implanted itself in my head and has stayed there ever since. Let's begin with this piece then, arranged by the series composer David Munro, here using an old melody by William Byrd called The Leaves Be Green. That little piece of music comes from the opening of the British miniseries Elizabeth R. It's based on a melody by William Byrd called The Leaves Be Green. Elizabeth I and her reign during the late 1500s has proved a popular subject for dramatization over the years, and she became a signature role for Bette Davis. An adventurous star, was always willing to play difficult characters. The 1939 film The Private Lives of Elizabeth and Essex gave Davis the chance to remake herself, shaving back her hairline and her eyebrows, powdering her face, for a movie that wondered whether the Virgin Queen might have had a fling along the way, the object of affection being the Earl of Essex, played by Errol Flynn. By the way, the movie was supposed to be called Elizabeth the Queen, being based on a play of that title, but Errol Flynn was not too happy about having his character be eclipsed in the title, so they added Essex. Here's some music from one of the most prestigious composers of the Hollywood studio age, Erich Wolfgang Korngold, a musical prodigy who was carrying on an illustrious career in Europe when he was invited to Hollywood, first to arrange the music for a spectacular film of A Midsummer Night's Dream in the mid-30s, which led to him scoring the big, bounteous scores for The Adventures of Robin Hood and The Seahawk and others. That also probably saved his life because he stayed in Hollywood when war broke out. Here are two pieces from Korngold's score for The Private Lives of Elizabeth and Essex. The first, an example of his romantic tendencies, titled Elizabeth the Queen. The next, a more assertive cue, titled Defeat in Ireland. Two selections there from the soundtrack of The Private Lives of Elizabeth and Essex, composed by the mighty Eric Wolfgang Korngold. We said that Bette Davis played Elizabeth twice, and the other time was in 1955 for the film The Virgin Queen. And once again, she was well served by a composer, this time another European emigre, Franz Voxmann, who had done many great Hollywood scores, such as Sunset Boulevard, Rebecca, Bride of Frankenstein. So here's a bit of Voxmann's score for The Virgin Queen, as you will hear his talent for adapting other melodies into a soundtrack, in this case the instantly recognizable British Grenadiers March in the early going of this suite. Thank you. spirited music there from the 1955 film The Virgin Queen, a story of Elizabeth I, composed by Franz Waxman. Filmmakers kept coming back to this story, not least because it gives a big role to an actress. And Bette Davis actually was not the only one to pull this repeating trick. We're going to look at a couple of others, too. Cate Blanchett, for one, with the films Elizabeth, that was 1998, and then Elizabeth, The Golden Age, from 2007. We're going to listen to something from the latter film here. It's score composed by Craig Armstrong and also A.R. Rahman, who has done the scores for countless films from India and also won a couple of Oscars for his work on Slumdog Millionaire. This cue is called Horse Riding. Some music from the 2007 film Elizabeth, The Golden Age, composed by Craig Armstrong and A.R. Rahman. You're listening to The Music of the Movies. I'm Robert Horton. We are considering films today featuring queens. And we teased you a little bit there. Who was the other actress who played Elizabeth I more than once, along with Bette Davis and Cate Blanchett? Well, actually, we began the show with her, somehow the same year that Glenda Jackson played the lead in that TV series, Elizabeth R., 1971, she also played her in the big screen film, Mary, Queen of Scots. As the title suggests, that one took the perspective of her cousin Mary, who had her Catholic claim to the throne of England. Vanessa Redgrave played Mary to Glenda Jackson's Elizabeth, and the movie was blessed with a rich score by the great John Barry. Let's listen to a couple of cues from that in a very different tone here. First, we'll hear Mary's theme, part one, where Barry exercises his melodic gifts, and then Journey to England, a moodier piece that would not be entirely out of place in one of Barry's James Bond scores. Thank you. Two cues from John Barry's score for the 1971 film Mary, Queen of Scots. You just heard Journey to England, preceded by the romantic Mary's theme. Well, the intrigue of the royal court has been an exhaustible source of movie plots, especially given the drama of two cousins separated by religion and politics in this case. The most recent version of this story was also titled Mary, Queen of Scots, released in 2018. With Saoirse Ronan as Mary and Margot Robbie as Elizabeth. Both films bring the pathos of Mary, who unfortunately loses her head, and we do mean that literally, when faced with the steely will of Elizabeth. Both films also invent a scene of the two queens meeting in person. Apparently they never actually did that, which leads to the question of how history might have been different if they'd, you know, worked something out. In my review of the 2018 film, I said, "It's a tantalizing moment. What if the royals had buried their differences and put together a 16th century dream team? Maybe the feminist cause would have had a 400-year head start instead of having this chapter end in another bloody royal beheading." Well, the music for the most recent version of Mary, Queen of Scots is by Max Richter, the German-born composer who also did the music for Ad Astra. Here's a music cue titled The Hilltop from Mary, Queen of Scots. That was music from the 2018 version of Mary, Queen of Scots, composed by Max Richter. Well, another strand of that sprawling family saga that preceded those cousins at war was explored in The Other Boleyn Girl, a 2008 film that dramatized Henry VIII's relationship with not only his second wife, Anne Boleyn, played by Scarlett Johansson, but also her sister, Mary, played by Natalie Portman. A situation that is freely fictionalized, I think, but still makes for juicy melodrama. Here's a musical cue from Paul Cantillon's score titled Anne Conspires, which sounds like the kind of thing where a girl could end up losing her head.
Thank you.
Music there from The Other Boleyn Girl, composed by Paul Cantillon, a film that dramatizes the story of Henry VIII's ill-fated second wife and her sister. In my review of the movie, I said, "We barely know from this movie that England's religious history was utterly changed by these incidents, and we hear nothing about the fascinating political machinations that went on behind the scenes. But hey, the costumes are great, and that's surely the point here." By the way, that movie was written by Peter Morgan. He's got a great sideline going in these things. He also wrote the feature about Queen Elizabeth II, titled The Queen, and the ongoing TV series The Crown. Well, Anne Boleyn was also at the center of the 1969 film Anne of the Thousand Days, played there by Genevieve Bujold, opposite Richard Burton's Henry VIII. Here, the great French composer Georges Delarue creates the kind of quintessential sound, what we think probably when we think of royal music of the era. Music composed by Georges Delarue from the 1969 film Anne of the Thousand Days, a film about Anne Boleyn and Henry VIII. And by the way, why are so many of these projects from the cusp of the 1960s and 70s? So is some throwback to a more settled idea of empire or something, despite all the murderous drama of kings and queens? I don't know, but you're listening to The Music in the Movies. I'm Robert Horton. We are considering some films centered on queens. Also caught up in the fallout from Henry VIII's desperate attempts to produce a male heir was the forlorn figure of Lady Jane Grey, the unfortunate teenager who was queen for just a few days in 1553. In a bungled attempt to maintain the Protestant reforms of Henry VIII, she was quickly replaced by Queen Mary. Not Mary, Queen of Scots, different Mary. This saga was dramatized in the 1986 film Lady Jane, which starred Helena Bonham Carter and Cary Elwes, both at the beginnings of their careers. I interviewed them when they came to Seattle for this film, both extremely young, and they were really bright, articulate people. I remember they both did spot-on impressions of their co-star, Patrick Stewart. Here's a little of the music from Lady Jane, composed by Stephen Oliver. That's some music from the 1986 film Lady Jane. Not a bad historical costume film at all. That seems to have been forgotten these days, it seems. Music composed by Stephen Oliver. He died in 1992 at age 42 from complications from AIDS, having composed operas and other stage and TV music. By the way, he was the uncle of the comedian John Oliver. But actually, there's also a really crazy coincidence for our purposes. Here, if you were online at all in the aftermath of Elizabeth II's death, you may have seen references to the first Naked Gun movie, especially the scene in which Reggie Jackson, under a trance during a baseball game with the Seattle Mariners, by the way, tries to assassinate Her Majesty. So, of course, they have an actress playing the Queen in that film, and her other indignities include being tackled at a public event by Leslie Nielsen's idiotic detective. And in that scene, there's a royal fanfare played, poor Leslie Nielsen standing in front of the horns and catching the blast at full volume. And that little bit of music was written for a previous project by Stephen Oliver, and he is duly credited for it. So there, I was trying to think of a way of mentioning the first Naked Gun movie and the Queen's appearance in it, and we managed to do it. Now, before we look at a more serious movie concerning the most recent Elizabeth, I wanted to touch base with some distant inhabitants of the English throne. We're going all the way back to the 1100s now. And the film The Lion in Winter, 1968 production that won Katharine Hepburn her third Oscar as Eleanor of Aquitaine, rather a remarkable figure who had already been Queen of France and is now married to Peter O'Toole's Henry II of England. A curious, often comic film. And here we have another score by John Barry. Let's hear how he sets the scene with his main title music from The Lion in Winter.
Oh.
That's music from The Lion in Winter by John Barry. That's a film that won Barry an Oscar for his score. We will include mention of the long-serving Queen Victoria here, a queen portrayed twice by the estimable Judi Dench, first in Mrs. Brown. That one was a speculation about Victoria's friendship with a Scottish attendant. And the second one was Victoria and Abdul from 2017, which has the queen taking on a tutor in the form of a Muslim man from India. It's a fairly silly movie, I think, although a pleasure to watch Judi Dench at work and also to hear composer Thomas Newman play around with the music. Here are two cuts from the soundtrack, the first of which, titled Victoria and Abdul, simply sounds like, you know, sort of formulaic royal family soundtracking, the second of which, Peacock Throne, adds Indian instruments to the English form. Two pieces of music from Thomas Newman's score for Victoria and Abdul there. That second brief cue adding Indian instruments to the mix, kind of like George Harrison throwing a sitar into a mid-60s Beatles cut. You're listening to The Music and the Movies. I'm Robert Horton. We are listening to films featuring queens. All right, let's get to a film that depicts Victoria's granddaughter, Elizabeth II, and a movie that won Helen Mirren an Oscar for playing the royal. The Queen, as it is simply titled, focuses on a fraught moment in Elizabeth's reign, the death of Princess Diana, and the public's expectations of how a queen should handle that. Included in the story is the ceremonial relationship between Queen and Prime Minister, in this case Tony Blair, played by Michael Sheen. The musical cue is composed by Alexander Desplat here. It's titled Elizabeth and Tony, and it captures some of the wry tone of director Stephen Frears' depiction of this relationship.
Thank you.
That's music by Alexandra Desplat from the 2006 film The Queen. All right, well, why don't we give ourselves leave to explore something beyond the British monarchy? Let's give a listen to a notable depiction of Cleopatra in an expensive production of that title from 1963. It almost bankrupted its studio, although it did fine for Elizabeth Taylor, who set the record with her $1 million salary in the title role. The movie's quite lavish, and it has an elaborate, huge score by Alex North, fine composer. Here's music fit for a queen in a cue titled Cleopatra's Barge. Music from the 1963 film Cleopatra, composed by Alex North, who did a lot of intimate dramas over the years from his breakthrough score for A Streetcar Named Desire onward, but also had a gift for large-scale work, as he had proved with Spartacus 3 years before Cleopatra. And there is our trailer music, which means we have something a little different here toward the end of the show. This time, a movie about another ill-fated queen, Marie Antoinette, who has appeared in a variety of films over the years, with a 2006 film starring Kirsten Dunst, taking an unusual approach, largely thanks to its musical score. The director, Sofia Coppola, shot the movie in its period trappings and all that, but layered anachronistic songs onto the soundtrack, including the one we're about to hear. The song is Hong Kong Garden, by Susie and the Banshees, has some added strings in the beginning to aid our segue into a big late 18th century ballroom scene where the music decidedly doesn't fit and yet maybe somehow does. Wait for it to kick in here and you'll get the vibe of Marie Antoinette. Thank you. That song is Hong Kong Garden by Susie and the Banshees, used to striking effect in Sofia Coppola's film Marie Antoinette, a movie I wish I liked it more, but I do like the idea of it, I guess. Well, that's our very quick and mostly Anglo-centric spin through movie music fit for queens. I have no problem with anybody talking about overthrowing the monarchy now. Let's do it. But, you know, it would rob us of a steady source of drama for film. For our final piece, we go back to Mary, Queen of Scots, the 1971 version, that is, and John Barry's score, as an excuse to hear the voice of the actress who plays the title role there, Vanessa Redgrave, and she sings a song in French titled Vivre et Mourir, which to my rough French, I think means to live and to die, and which sums up the melancholy of her royal self, doomed to execution by her cousin's orders at age 44. I'm Robert Horton, urging you to keep your head about you as I thank you for listening to The Music and the Movies.
De mon loyal devoir, non mettons la science, à quoi j'étudierai.